Hey, back after a long absence, David Catalano and I are in the studio today. It is finally a new episode of Nevada Backcountry only on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Thank you to Shooting Performance Institute in Gardnerville for sponsoring the show. So, Dave, why were we out the last couple weeks?
We've had a lot of fun, to say the least.
That's a fact, yeah.
To say the least, we went and did some really awesome archery shoots.
Yes, we did.
And what was the other thing? All I can think about is Redding, because it was just...
You had like commission meetings and quota stuff.
Yeah, work.
So we'll cover that.
That work stuff.
But, the quotas are out, so we'll cover that on this show. First, let's dive right into... I always get the name. It's got like five different names, but it's the Western Classic Trail Shoot.
It's also the NFAA Outdoor National 3D Championship.
There we go. So I lied. It's not five. It's just two.
Well, I'm sure there's a few more in there after you shoot a couple of days. You're like, this effing shoot.
So you
name it yourself. But
so we got back from that. Well, let's talk a little bit about that. We started every year. We get hyped up for this thing.
Oh,
we
crazy.
Go out, shoot our bows. We're like, yes, this is the year. Here's the score that we're going to shoot, blah, blah, blah. Let's see. Last year was you running out of arrows.
Well, I didn't run out of arrows.
Okay. Yeah.
I had Timmy,
you,
and Bernie blowing my arrows up.
That's a fact. Yeah.
Yes. So I ended up not having enough arrows by the end of the shoot.
Just don't shoot the orange dot, Dave, and you're good.
You guys were horrible. But yes.
So this year.
Yes. Yeah.
What happened this year, Dave?
This year, Henry and I pull up. We decide that we're going to grab a little practice session down in the... Got there a day early because the... Anyway, so... And my lower limb on my bow is cracked.
Yep. We weren't in Redding for more than 2 minutes and Danger Dave pulls the bow out and you've got a limb separating on it.
Yes.
Yeah.
And there's nothing you can do.
Nope.
I mean, it was like, well, I can't get upset about this, man. This is just a poop show just happening, rolling out in front of me right now. Just go with it.
Your face when you pulled that bow out.
Oh, my God.
And I was like, this poor guy, man.
Yeah. I figured, you know what? I'm just going to shoot this thing until it blows up.
We put some super glue in there. We wrapped it with electrical tape.
Yeah.
And ran it.
You know, but still, it held up. Held up for the whole shoot. And the Redding shoot is pretty taxing on you.
Yes.
It's a lot of hiking. The course is enormous.
It's a challenge.
It's a challenge. It's 4 days of shooting if you choose to. You got Thursday.
We did. Yep.
Thursday is a pro-am. You get partnered up with a pro. And then Friday, Saturday, Sunday is the actual national shoot.
Right.
You're throwing about 200 arrows.
Yep. We can go into some of the challenges outside of just your bow coming apart when you show up.
Awesome.
But hey, you made it through the whole thing.
I did.
And I
finally, after several years, shot a .22 on the 101-yard Bigfoot.
Yes, you did.
Yes.
And couldn't have shot it any better.
Yeah.
When I was spotting for you, and I got kind of shaky, and I was like, he just did it.
Yeah.
Like, it's hard to see, especially with those colored veins you're running and everything.
Yeah, the gray veins. I did that so none of you fools could see my arrows in the orange. Yeah.
Well, I saw it arc. And it was like perfect trajectory. And then I lost it when it went into the dot. Anybody that was there with us knows, like, I was kind of shaking. I went, Dave, that was it, man.
Yeah.
You're in there. And then when we got there, the best part was you could not have shot a better group. It was like two arrows an inch apart at 100 yards, dead center of the orange dot.
Yep.
It was perfect.
Yep. And so
absolutely perfect.
Now I have 22'd every single target on the Redding course. That list has been checked.
Oh, so man, I was so happy to be there and see that.
And with that stupid broken bow. I was like, man, I got up to that Bigfoot. I was like, okay, I so got to concentrate on my form, presentation, execution. I've only got two shots at this, man. That's it.
You don't get a redo.
And it worked out.
Yeah.
It worked out.
Let's start talking about some of the challenges of the shoot for you.
For me?
What was challenging this year?
I'd have to say, not just this year, but every year, when you're shooting that much and then you're hiking that much and then shooting and then hiking and shooting, is maintaining that consistency in the shot cycle.
And the focus.
And the focus, because you think about it. The pros, Hansen, who won Redding, the top score you can shoot in Redding is a 1,540 points. He shot a 1,538. So he only dropped 2 points the entire 4 days.
And so people listening understand, when you say dropped 2 points, you're talking about he was just outside of a perfect bullseye.
Correct.
So instead of getting an 11, he got 10 points. I mean, he's still shooting inside.
Oh, he's still shooting
a small circle.
Yeah. I mean, Bigfoot is the biggest orange dot on the course, and that's 8 inches.
Paint can lid.
Yeah, yeah. That's it. It's 8 inches.
Yeah.
All the rest of them are anywhere from an inch and a half, 2 inches in diameter to 3 inches or so. And then you get to the bigger targets, which are, you know, like around 5 inches across. And those are 70 and 80 yard shots.
Right.
And then you have Bigfoot, which is 8 inches across.
Yeah. So he only dropped 2 points, meaning he just didn't hit whatever size orange dot twice over the course of the entire event.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, but that's the difference. It's that maintaining that consistency in your shot form. That's the toughest part. A lot of times when you're shooting that much, you're just getting yourself into a...
Yeah, you're just like, I'm going to send it.
Yeah, you get up on the line, you're like, all right, there's a target. You draw back, you're like, okay, whack. You don't follow your shot process. And then you're like, oh, dude, I just shot a 10. And that's why.
Well, for them, maybe a 10. For me, I'm like, my arrow's not in there. The target at all. So, yeah, you're 100% right.
You shot really
well,
too. You shot really well.
Well, I'll say on that note, look, and we shoot a bunch. We shoot at home, like for fun after work and everything. We shoot a bunch of arrows.
Shoot leagues. We shoot a ton.
And I told Dave before we walked in the studio, I said, I'm going to sound like a wuss, but I elected to shoot my hunting bow this year at Redding. Exactly what I'm going to hunt with this upcoming season.
Yeah.
When I draw that moose tag.
Okay. we'll talk about that later. Yeah.
But I noticed by Sunday, probably midday, shooting a bow at 72 pounds, couple hundred arrows over the course of 4 days, I did notice that kind of like, okay, get up here, draw my bow, shoot it, and just like be done. I started to get a little worn out by the end of it. A lot of guys will go, you know, they'll dust off their bow preseason. They'll shoot like 5-6 arrows and be like, oh, it's still zeroed. Good. I'm good to go. I can hunt. And you only need one arrow in a perfect world hunting. So,
and you only have to hit something the size of a 15 inches. Hubcap.
But so when you're shooting, man, a 72-pound hunting bow, and I like mine with less let off just because I feel like it makes me hold steadier. By Sunday, I was kind of like, man, I'm kind of worked. This is a lot of shooting with a hunting bow. Last year, I shot it with a target bow at 60 pounds. Year before, I shot it with a target bow at 60 pounds. So this was a good reality check for me of like, maybe I'm not quite as strong as I thought I was.
No, it's just my competition bow's at 60... For almost 65 pounds, after a lot of shooting like that, or like a feet around where you're shooting 180 arrows in one day.
Ooh, yeah.
It's
taxing.
You start to feel it a little bit, especially the next morning. You're like, man, that shoulder and the part of your core is just kind of like, that's kind of wore out a little bit.
And I know it's just my ability to hold the bow steady.
Yes.
Like I said, that last six targets was kind of like, okay, get it up there. Okay, there's the orange, bang,
and that's what I was just saying, that's where that focus comes in. You've got to approach every single target like it's the first target, like you're just going through the process in your head, holding, push, pull, bow, it goes off, and you're just, everything's repetitive. That's why we're not in that pro category making the,
making money.
Walking off with the $20,000 check.
Yeah.
I mean, and they are. I mean, Paige Pierce, boy, that poor lady, she took a spill.
Oh, yeah. She split herself open.
Big time.
Yeah.
Right below her kneecap, boy, she filleted that dog wide open. And she still finished the course.
Yep.
Shot the rest of the weekend.
And won.
That woman is a absolute machine. And then... Yeah. When I went up and was talking to her, I'm like asking her how she was doing and stuff. She's like, oh my God, I'm so good. This is
never
great.
Brought it up.
No, I brought it up. I was like, how's the leg doing? She's like, it's a little sore, but it'll make it. And I'm like, this chick's a rock star. Oh, it was a nasty cut. nasty slice.
Well, hey, we are out of time for this segment. When we come back, we'll get a little more into Redding, some more of the challenges faced, some of the equipment stuff, some of the steep angles, and the good company we had while we were there. Do not go anywhere. Stay tuned to 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. And we are back on Nevada Backcountry. We left off with some of the Redding recap stuff, the Western Classic Trail Shoot that Dave and I just got back from. Over the break there, we got talking about some of the additional challenges, and you brought up the guy that won, Stefan Hansen.
Stefan Hansen, yeah.
And it's always not amazing to me, but it's interesting to me where you lose points on that course. Everybody always seems to get hung up on like the 88-yard elk scene or 83, whatever
it is. It's 88-yard or the 74-yard moose or or the mountain goats.
The long stuff.
Yeah, they focus on the long stuff. And
bulk of the points are in those middle distances.
Yeah, there's something, it's like 1,260 of those points are between 20 yards and 45 yards.
Yeah. Middle distances.
Yeah, middle distances. But those dots on those middle distances are small.
I'll call them fringe targets because they have like a regulated size of dot.
Yes.
Between X and X amount of yards.
Correct.
And so like you'll get the same size dot at 21 yards that you get at 29 or 30
Correct.
Yards.
Yeah, because it's the NFAA regs. So it's, certain dot from 21 to 29, certain dot from 30 to 39 type of thing. So
right. Those fringes are the tough ones to hit because you're trying to hit the same size bullseye at 39 yards that you were at 30 yards.
Yes.
And that so at 30 yards, it's like, hey, this is easy.
Yeah, and that 9 yards is pretty significant when you're talking an inch and a half wide orange dot.
Just gets much harder to hit.
It's like, where'd it go?
And not to, you and I have talked about this before on the show, those short yardages, the 3, 4, 8, 9, I lost a bunch of points on those, even though I can't even count how many arrows I flung before going to the shoot at those, like making sure, okay, my 3 is dialed, my 4 is dialed, on and on and on. And then you get over there and I was consistently high on all of them. And so by the end, I was cutting 2 yards for all of them off of my sight. And for people listening, when I say cutting, meaning like if I normally would shoot a 4 yard target for 42 yards on my sight, I was shooting it for 40. And then I started finding the orange dot. But there's so many different challenges. And I told, shout out to Bernie from our group.
Bernie Punzalan.
Yeah, I told Bernie, it's amazing to me, every single year, it's the same animals and the same distances.
Yep.
But it never shoots like the same course. This year, we had warm weather. It was sunny.
Weather was fantastic.
Except for the wind.
Yeah, Sunday the wind kicked up and we had some challenges with the wind. But for me, I was like, this is cool because this is just hunting. Like hunting in August in Nevada. Yeah. The afternoons end up generally becoming a little bit on the breezy side. You know, so like last year, we had rain for a day and a half, 2 days almost, and it was kind of chilly. Your bow's going to react a little differently.
Well, not just rain. We had like marble-sized hail.
Yeah, we had that too. We had,
the year before was like straight rain the whole time.
Yeah. Last year was that hail storm while we were shooting the 88-yard elk.
You can't even see them down there. It's like, all right, I found brown. I'm going to send an arrow.
Yeah. But you know, that plays a big factor on your bow is temperature.
Oh, absolutely.
Big time. The strings, the limbs, the compressions. So there's all of those components. So as you start shooting and you're going along throughout the day, you'll start noticing your bow. Sometimes you'll start shooting a little. If you're in the dead center of that orange and you're starting to creep at that 12 o'clock mark on the top of the orange, you're like, all right, it's getting warmer, so I'm starting to creep. You know, a lot of people will change their number. I'll just start aiming towards the 6 o'clock line on the orange.
I noticed that day it was really warm. I think it was the first day.
First day, yeah.
It was in the 80s.
It was 86 or something.
And we shot the stretch with no shade.
Yes.
And I noticed leaving my bow sitting in the sun Yeah, about halfway through the day, I started shooting a little higher yep. on everything. And I was yeah. like, well, this doesn't make any sense. My zero hasn't changed throughout yeah. the day. That little stuff.
Yeah, it's that little stuff that kind of starts taking points away from you.
Oh, absolutely.
And when you're trying to shoot your, yeah, when you're trying to do your personal best and you're like, okay, I'm going to shoot a 1520 this year. I'm shooting right. a 1520. Every point counts because you can't yeah. drop to shoot a 1500. You can't drop more than 13 points a day. And a lot of people out there are like, oh man, 13, that's no big deal. Yeah, it's a big deal.
Yes.
It's a yes. huge deal, you know, because you're shooting total of 70 targets.
We talked about this before the show too. The really steep angled up and down yeah. shots, it was something that I've practiced. I've shot, you know, we're from Nevada. We shoot that stuff, these angles. But all it was my feet and how I was setting up my feet, closing off my stance, opening up my stance. And boy, I rode the struggle bus for about four targets where I was like, man, I'm consistently shooting. And again, I go through the like, did I drop my bow? Did something change to my zero? Something's not happening right here that I need to happen. Shout out to Bernie again.
Yeah.
Bernie watched me shoot one target and he goes, close your stance, bro. I started closing my stance on those uphill ones.
And he started pitching your stance in. So
Your
forward foot towards the target was actually going ahead of your other foot.
Yeah. There we go. Yeah. So you're closing your stance. And then it was like, oh, my bow feels like it normally feels
stable.
Again. Yeah, I started shooting 22. Same thing on the downhills. I was just using the same stance. Well, Bernie had me open it way up.
Yeah.
And suddenly it's like, oh, but that's that little stuff that you just get like, oh, I'm just shooting a bow. Nothing's different. Nah, it's different for sure.
That's why that practice is so critical. But one of the best things was after we were done shooting, hanging out, like, let's go back to the house because I'll tell you, people, the group that we've been shooting with for the last, well, I've been shooting with them for the last 12 years.
Yeah, I'm a relative newcomer to the group.
Henry's one of the newcomers. This is like his third or fourth year with the group.
Third year, I think.
These fools show up. I mean, we've got our friends from Alaska, Missouri, Oklahoma, Arkansas.
Where else?
But so we had 12 people, 12 of our buddies that all showed up. Those fools from Alaska, John Eby and Justin Rocket, holy Lord. I don't know how they get this stuff down there, but they bring a suitcase. They open this suitcase up every year. I don't know why it keeps surprising me.
No.
They open it up and they're like, so tonight we're going to have muskox. We're going to have elk.
Caribou.
We're doing moose spaghetti tonight.
Yep.
Caribou sausages.
It was awesome.
Meat sticks coming out of the wazoo.
Yeah.
Muskox. It was like, we ate like.
So much food. We did the steak night.
Yeah.
Those things were ginormous. And I don't think, even between all 12 of us, I don't think we finished those things.
I finished mine, but I had the meat sweats.
Oh, yeah. I finished mine.
I was like, I'm eating this whole dang thing. So yeah, I'll clean my plate. Move my salad aside. I'm like, nope, not yet. Nope. I'm sticking to all meat. And then,
Every year I eat a ton of food over there. It's awesome.
Oh, it's fantastic. Yeah. Oh my God. And those boys can cook.
Yes.
But I mean, you look at them, you're like, those boys can cook. Yeah, they're great dudes. Great dudes. Yeah. I love those guys. So.
They like them some food.
Yeah.
I will say, too, on the, I'll call it the Island of Misfit Toys that we've assembled for Redding.
Oh, yeah.
Shout out to the Arkansas crew because
those boys,
they are not used to, you know, we're talking to them about ASA shoots.
Right.
And they were like, no, everything's flat. We don't walk too far between anything. Man, they hung in there. There were definitely some moments of like, oh man, is he going to make it? Like he doesn't look so hot right now. They did great.
Yeah.
They did great. All of them.
I thought it was cute that,
cute.
It was cute. Ricky was like, these mountains are killing me.
And I was like, foothills,
I'm like, dude, these are not mountains. They're mountains in Arkansas.
Yeah. It was challenging.
These are hills. These are just hills.
What was it? It was Ricky and JT were the new guys from
TJ.
Arkansas. TJ.
TJ.
Yeah.
The ones that replaced you as the newbies.
Oh, I was so happy not to have to pull arrows.
Yeah. And Ricky's, that dude's hilarious.
Oh, they, yeah.
Well, they both are, but.
I was going to say, if I had time, I'll rip through it real quick, but one of my best, hardest I laughed this year was ripping open a porta potty door to find Ricky standing in it going to the bathroom.
Oh, Jesus.
And I didn't realize, like, I was just like, oh, I'm going to open this door. Well, the, like, locking thing blew up. So as I'm ripping this door open, because I had to go to the bathroom, Ricky's standing in there. The squeal he let out, and it was like the perfect, there's parts of plastic blowing up all over, and he just whirled around and squealed. And I was like, that, there it is. There's my writing highlight.
So, yeah, we definitely recommend anyone out there who wants to get into just a good family shoot as well as insanely competitive, depending on how you want to mix and match it. Put Redding, if you're a competitive archer, 3D shooter, you've got to put Redding on your bucket list.
Hands down, best shoot I've ever.
Yeah, we look forward. It's like our Christmas weekend.
Absolutely. When we come back, let's get into quotas. We've got some good news, some okay
moderate news. Mainly good.
Mostly good.
I'd have to say most of this is really good news.
Yeah. So if you put in for tags this upcoming year, do not go anywhere. We are going to cover the quota news on the next two segments of Nevada Backcountry. Thank you for hanging in there over the break, and big thanks to Legacy Sports International, home of the Howa Superlight, for sponsoring Nevada Backcountry. Quick little bit of housekeeping. First, got some great feedback. John sent us a really nice email. He said he likes the banter back and forth between us. But John also brought up, he said, hey, you know, I'm older. I don't hunt anymore. I still fish. I hike. I do all this stuff outdoors. If you guys ever would consider doing some shows on just getting into the outdoors, maybe not just hunting. We've done a few over the years, but yeah, I mean, it's tough because what you and I know and what you and I do is archery and bow hunting and, well, shoot, rifles, all that stuff. So yeah, hey, John, sincere thank you for the feedback, and we will try to incorporate some of that stuff.
Yeah, we'll definitely do that because, yeah, I mean, we do some good hikes and I do some backpacking. So yeah, I think that'd be a cool one to get into.
I'm fishing this weekend.
As well as fishing. I mean, right now, if you can get out there, I know our buddy Pat's out there this weekend right now, is Wall Canyon is just
supposedly on fire.
Smoking right now.
Yeah.
Smoking hot.
And Jim Irwin, Shooting Performance Institute. Let's see, we've got the Hunter's Challenge is May 18th. And then by popular demand, he's added a second date for his introduction to long range shooting course. That's the course my dad and I took before going to Canada last year. And I will tell you, it is really, really cool to see proof of concept in the field. Like, okay, I can plug in these numbers and theoretically I should have first round impacts at 800 and whatever yards, but to actually go out and do it and see that proof of concept of like, okay, I use this math, I had these settings on my rifle, and there I am stacking them at 800. Like, my confidence was at an all-time high last year.
Talking with Jim, I mean, he really explains every step of how to do it, you know, the best way of approaching it. And he's had folks that have gone into that course that were having trouble hitting a gong at 300 yards, just like horrible. They were just struggling big time. After his 2-day course, they were hitting the gong at 1200 yards.
Yeah. So, we shot out to a mile.
Shot out to a mile. Yeah. And he says, you know, it's a matter of explaining it the way he does. And then people, you know, it's up to you to take it in and to try to utilize it the best you can. But if you follow what he tells you, because he really lays it out like third grade style, then you should be punching holes.
And so we did. Yeah, he added one. It's August 2nd and 3rd.
Yeah.
So go to shootingperformanceinstitute.com, sign up for one or both of those. I was going to say, too, not just Jim, and Jim's, like I've said before, probably one of the best trainers in the country, if not the world, but all of his guys that he brings for that course out there.
Oh, yeah.
All the other cadre members, I'll call them. It was a simple thing like sliding my hand slightly on the grip, and suddenly my groups moved from being off at like 7 o'clock a little bit back into the center. So they'll look at your body mechanics while you do all that. And that's the thing when guys go out and shoot long range is even somebody like me, who that was a large part of my life in the military, you know, man, you don't do it for a decade or more. And it's like, oh, okay, this, that, or the, you forget those fine little mechanics.
Yeah.
To where his instructors will just look at you and go, hey man, do me a favor, slide your hand this way, bring your elbow in this way. Okay, now send another one. Perfect, center mass. Yeah. And you're like, oh, that was it? Yeah. Versus doing it with some buddies out of the back of a pickup truck and going, man, I don't know. This long range stuff kind of sucks. I don't know what's going on.
This is nuts. I think my scope must be off.
Exactly. Yeah. So go check out shootingperformanceinstitute.com.
Yeah, because you're going to need that because of the increase in tags.
Oh, buddy.
For mule deer and illegal weapon.
Yes.
You and I have been going through this and going, is that right?
Quotas are out.
Right? Yeah, quotas are out.
Let's go highlights, yeah.
Yeah, let's do some highlights. So if you're going for, let's say, deer, an illegal weapon, some areas like area 10, 15, 16, area 10 alone went up over 300 tags.
So what's that tell you?
That tells me that last year when the CAB went in there and sliced all the quotas that the Department of Wildlife presented to them, and they said, nah, we're going to do our own thing.
Yeah.
That's telling me that this is trying to get back to what needs to be done to maintain healthy and stable herds.
Yep.
Is what's happening. So
I use a phrase on the show all the time. The pendulum has swung. And this year, I think the pendulum has finally swung in the favor of hunters.
Yes.
And I'm not poo-pooing the CABs, but everybody knew what the score was last year when those tags got sliced. And it was not based on endow biologist recommendations. So this year, it looks like that pendulum has swung back a little bit in favor of hunters, which I am ecstatic about.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be great. Like antelope, on average, some areas, area 04346 went up 20 tags, 4142 went up 35 tags. Some areas lost some tags, like 12 and 14. They went down a little bit, but overall for antelope, you're looking at most of the areas on average across the entire hunting spectrum, probably averaged 7 to 10 tag increases.
Awesome.
You know, some of them didn't move at all, obviously, but the bulk of them went up. So then, you know, sheep is another one where they didn't really move a whole lot. I mean, they stayed pretty much the same because they're already, most of the tags are pretty low in the first place.
Right, right.
So it's
when you're
like,
talking about a difference between 3 and 4.
So
what about for elk? We talked briefly before we walked in here, we were chatting about this. Some of the elk numbers, I think that was one of the ones where there were quite a few that went down, correct?
In some areas, yeah, they did go down. Other areas jumped back up, the 6s and the 7s.
Jumped back up,
jumped way up in some cases. Some of them where it looked like 15, 18 more tags in some of those hunts. And some others, 1-2-1 went down a little bit. Area 221, 223 went down two or three tags. But in general, again, if you go across the entire state with any legal weapon, muzzleloader, and deer all combined per se, on average, they've gone up about 3 to 4 tags.
Good.
On average. So that's good. Better than last year where they went down on average like 5 or 6 tags.
Across the board.
Across the board. So, but I do want to go back to antelope real quick because there's that brand new hunt. The junior horns shorter than ears. So
where'd those tags come from?
Yeah. So folks, if you've got a junior that you put in for that tag, that's going to be awesome for them.
Yes.
Department of Wildlife and the commission really support giving our kids a chance to get in the field and experience the joy of hunting.
Yes.
So, and it's reflective on how they distributed those tags for shorter than ears. It was significant. So there's a huge drop in the
There we go. Lead with the good.
Yeah,
that was my question. Where did those tags come from? And you and I know the answer to it. Here's the not so great about where those junior horn shorter tags came from.
Right. So there's got to be, you just can't create more tags. We just can't do that as a state. We just can't be like, well, we're going to leave that alone and then we're just going to add a whole bunch more tags for another group. They got to come from somewhere. And there's only one hunt for shorter than ears, an illegal weapon, and that's all she wrote. In years past, like areas, 141, 43, 52, then the other hunt, 51, 53, 56, and then the other hunt, 061, 67 area. Those were always in the 200-300 range for horns shorter than ears. Well, folks, they're not there anymore.
They went to kids.
They went to the kids. And I think that's great. I think it's very important that we do that. So the kids' hunts for 141, 43, 152, 54, 55, 290 tags.
Yeah.
That was reflective on the regular hunt that we all put in for shorter than ears, dropped from 310 to 65.
Yeah.
So that's where it all plays out. That's the one that had probably the one hunt that probably had the biggest
shift. It was a huge swing.
And we kind of knew that because when they created the whole resident junior antelope horn shorter than ears hunt, we knew that those tags were going to come out of the regular hunt.
Right.
The hunts are still during the same time frame. They're still September 8th to September 24th, but that's across the board. That's the one that took the
biggest hit. Like you said, I'm okay with that. Part of that is just acceptance. You're not going to create this new hunt for kids and just like double the tag number in an area.
Correct.
You're going to decimate the herd.
Right.
So I'm kind of like, okay, first off, it's horns shorter. I think horns shorter hunts, I think like new hunters, and I'm not, I just want to hunt.
I love that hunt.
So I'm not saying like, oh, I'm too good. No, that's not the case. I'd love to draw one of those tags, but I think that's a phenomenal hunt for new hunters, for kids, etc. So I'm like, all right, if you're going to swing that pendulum on any of these hunts, horns shorter, like go ahead, give it to the kids, let them do it.
Yeah, because it's a really great introductory hunt. They're in the
lowlands,
you see a lot of animals. Yeah. The beauty of the antelope hunt, you're generally in the flats, spot antelope all over the place.
Hunting out of a fifth wheel or a trailer or something.
It's a great introduction to them.
I got one more question on that, but we are up against a break. Do not go anywhere. Stay tuned to 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Thank you to Battleborn Tree Service for Hunters by Hunters for sponsoring Nevada Backcountry. A special shout out to Mike from Battleborn Tree Service. Being in the radio business, I found myself hanging from a tower the other morning. Mike is an absolute great human being. He came up with his boom truck and was able to lift up tools and antenna parts. So Mike, if you're listening, sincere thanks for going out there with my dad and I the other morning and getting that project done. Cannot recommend him enough. Battleborn Tree Service. Before we went to break, we were talking about the horn shorter antelope tag, Dave, and how that have gone over to the junior youth hunters.
Correct.
And I am asking David Catalano, my buddy, do you see that party tag ever going away?
No.
So even if they keep kind of sloughing off those hunts to the youth hunters, you don't see the adult party tag thing changing?
No, I see the party tag maintaining as the putting in for party tags for deer, antelope horns shorter than ears, and
elk antlerless
will be the three categories. I don't see that going away.
Another question for you. Last year, they kind of reallocated, how do I want to say this? Not reallocated, but they kind of put more emphasis on archery tags.
Primitive weapons.
Archery and muzzleloader.
Correct. Right? Changed the algorithm.
Okay, and that stayed. That's the same this year?
That's still, that was put in place at that last year's commission.
Okay.
It was approved upon. It was the new process that going into last year. And then obviously the cab did what they did. So then you didn't really experience that shift in
tag,
in
allocation.
Tag allocations.
Yeah.
This year you did.
Okay.
This year you can see it. If you go back 2 years and grab the quotas off of the 23-24 book,
right,
and you compare them to the pages now for the new quotas for 25-26, you'll see that how that calculation has benefited primitive weapons,
archery and muzzle loaders.
Folks that aren't pulling tags and are complaining, I haven't had a tag in 10 years, 8 years, 7 years. Some of the areas you put in for, if you're putting in for areas where there's 4 or 5 tags or maybe 10, and you're in there with a pool of, 4,000 other people putting in for that, because
odds are pretty low.
Yeah, that's where the 30-inch deer yeah. are. You know what? We've got friends that put in for Area 10 every year, draw
pull
tags,
big deer. Yep.
And they are pulling 180, 185 class, and some few of them bigger deer still out of Area 10.
I always
and the big 6 and 7.
I equate it to how much work are you willing to put in?
Yes.
And then everybody gets, so back in the day, right, it was at 062 Pennsylvania Hill. That area was notorious for really wide deer. And so everybody got it in their head. This is the place to go for really, well, guess what? There's really wide deer in every unit in the state.
Yes.
Just the ones that there are usually a lot of tags in usually incorporate some wilderness areas. And you gotta really,
some
really work.
Steep and deep locations where you gotta, you just gotta put the pack on and say, okay, I'll be back in the truck in 3 days.
Yep.
And you just go. That can't be for everybody.
Because I've got a really
good friend, good old high school buddy, who got a hold of me recently and wanted to know where he could put in for one of his buddies who is, he's in his 80s.
Ooh,
he's
yeah.
not backpacking jack no. squat. He's got some health issues. And he was wondering, like, where can we get him in to where, like, this may be his last hunt type of a thing.
And get a side-by-side
right,
in
and
there.
He wants a good deer. I'm like, well,
here's where I'd look.
The days of jumping in your 72 Chevy and driving down the road and whacking a 180 class buck off the side of the road, those are gone. I mean, you still might get lucky on occasion and have that happen. But in reality, compared to the 80s when deer herds were friggin' amazing, back then archery was statewide, and on average they would have like 300 to 400 people put in for tags for archery. Last year, there was over 12,000.
Right.
So there's a big difference. So there's a lot more people in the field and a lot more people spooking animals all over God's creation. So. Yeah.
And those, mule deer, too, are just, we've talked about it before, they're getting their butts kicked.
They're squirrely.
It's just not, it's not that anymore.
No.
If you want, like, really high-quality deer, you can find them in any unit. But, like you said, the days of leaning the rifle over the hood of the truckers, man, that ship sailed a long time ago.
Yeah.
And you might get yourself in hot water with a game warden
for doing that. Put that Pabst Blue Ribbon next to the gun, like, all right, boys, here we go.
Yeah, there he is.
Let's get some dinner for tonight.
So, hey, the other one that I've been asked about, moose.
Yes. Well, it's no surprise. It's
not to anybody paying attention.
Yeah, not to anyone that's paying attention and following the commission and all the stuff going on. It's still two.
Yep. Two bulls.
Yeah, right.
It's
two bulls. That's it. September 1st to November 30th in areas 6-1, 6-2, 6-4, 6-6 to 6-8, 7-1 to 7-7, 8-1. And then area 101 to 103. That's it. Two.
Yep. Same exact thing as last year.
There's a whole lot of buzz online about, they're going to three. They're going to no, they're not.
No.
And they didn't. Two. And one's mine, so actually there's one.
There's one.
There's only one.
Another one that I haven't been asked about, but I was actually pleasantly surprised. You and I have talked on the show about some of the struggles of the mountain goat.
Yeah.
Where'd those tag numbers go?
They went up.
Yeah.
Yeah, they did.
I did not expect that one at all.
I did not either. I was not expecting it to go up. The mountain goats have, over the last few years, have been doing better. So in area 102, they went from 12 tags to 14, and that's big.
That's a big increase.
That's a big increase. And then in 101, they added another tag, so now there's two tags in there.
Okay.
And then 103, there's still one. Realistically, I mean, that hasn't moved much at all. So,
and I, know. Like I said, I just did not see, that was one of those ones where I was pleasantly surprised, because if you had asked me last week, hey, what do you think the mountain goat tag numbers are going to be? I'd say best case scenario, flat, same as last year. More likely scenario, probably down a touch. So to see them go up, hey, fantastic, man.
They put in the non-resident is one tag in 102.
Okay.
So there's actually a total of 15 tags in that area. So we'll see, man. I put in for 101 and 102. Well, I put in for all three units.
Yeah.
But, so.
I put 102 as my first choice always.
Yeah.
That was kind of a bright spot in the whole thing. I mean, overall, Dave, it looks like it's going to be a phenomenal year for hunters. I think a lot of people are going to draw tags this year that may be riding that struggle bus of like, man, it's been 5 years. I haven't drawn a tag. Hey, everybody, keep your eyes peeled come the end of the month, because I think there's going to be a lot of folks drawing tags that may have previously complained a little bit.
I definitely see it. This is going to be a good year for hunters across all disciplines.
Mm-hmm.
Tags are up in all three.
I think
it's going to be great. The kids have a lot better chance this year, too.
Yep.
With the primitive weapon classes actually getting a lot of traction.
Yes.
As well as the new antelope shorter than ears tags for them. There's got to be 600 plus tags just in that new hunt alone.
Did you ever figure out what the success rates were during that primitive thing, or any kind of scuttlebutt you've heard as far as like most of them took it to muzzleloader?
No, I did not. I didn't get to jump into that data, but I'll do that. That's kind of interesting.
I'd be interested to see, because everybody I know, I'm looking at the ceiling, folks, because I want to make sure I don't make a liar out of myself. Yep, I'll go with that. Everybody I know whose kid drew that tag took it to muzzleloader.
Really?
Really. Well, hey, thank you sincerely, everybody, for tuning in. Dave and I are happy to be back in the studio. Stay tuned, because Tom Gresham is coming up next, and my buddy Andy McCormick is going to be on with Tom Gresham.
Nice.
Coming up in a few minutes here, talking about the Howa Superlights, talking about the Howa 1500s. So do not go anywhere. Stay tuned for Andy McCormick's segment on Gun Talk.